flushed and no hat.
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Otis,
gasped out the boy.
But I can't eat any dinner as long as Virginia's lost. Please don't be angry with me. If you had let us be engaged last year, there would never have been all this trouble. You won't send me back, will you? I can't go. I won't go.
The minister could not help smiling at the handsome young scapegrace, and was a good deal touched by his devotion to Virginia. So, leaning down from his horse, he patted him kindly on the shoulders and said, "Well, Cecil, if you won't go back, I suppose you must come with me. But I must get you a hat at Ascot."
"Oh, bother my hat, I want Virginia,"
cried the little Duke, laughing. And they galloped on to the railway station. There Mr. Otis inquired of the station master if anyone answering to the description of Virginia had been seen on the platform, but could get no news of her. The station master, however, wired up and down the line and assured him that a strict watch would be kept for her, and, after having bought a hat for the little Duke from a linen draper who was just putting up his shutters, Mr. Otis rode off to Bexley, a village about 4 miles away, which he was told was a well-known haunt of the gypsies, as there was a large common next to it. Here they roused up the rural policeman, but could get no information from him, and after riding all over the common, they turned their horses' heads homewards and reached the chase about 11 o'clock, dead tired and almost heartbroken. They found Washington and the twins waiting for them at the gatehouse with lanterns, as the avenue was very dark. Not the slightest trace of Virginia had been discovered. The gypsies had been caught on Brockley Meadows, but she was not with them, and they had explained their sudden departure by saying that they had mistaken the date of Chawton Fair and had gone off in a hurry for fear they should be late. Indeed, they had been quite distressed at hearing of Virginia's disappearance, as they were very grateful to Mr. Otis for having allowed them to camp in his park, and four of their number had stayed behind to help in the search. The carp pond had been dragged, and the whole chase thoroughly gone over, but without any result. It was evident that, for that night at any rate, Virginia was lost to them, and it was in a state of the deepest depression that Mr. Otis and the boys walked up to the house, the groom following behind with the two horses and the pony. In the hall they found a group of frightened servants, and lying on a sofa in the library was poor Mrs. Otis, almost out of her mind with terror and anxiety, and having her forehead bathed with eau de cologne by the old housekeeper. Mr. Otis at once insisted on her having something to eat, and ordered up supper for the whole party. It was a melancholy meal, as hardly anyone spoke, and even the twins were awestruck and subdued, as they were very fond of their sister. When they had finished, Mr. Otis, in spite of the entreaties of the little Duke, ordered them all to bed, saying that nothing more could be done that night, and that he would telegraph in the morning to Scotland Yard for some detectives to be sent down immediately. Just as they were passing out of the dining room, midnight began to boom from the clock tower, and when the last stroke sounded, they heard a crash and a sudden shrill cry. A dreadful peal of thunder shook the house. A strain of unearthly music floated through the air. A panel at the top of the staircase blew back with a loud noise, and out on the landing, looking very pale and white, with a little casket in her hand, stepped Virginia. In a moment they had all rushed up to her. Mrs. Otis clasped her passionately in her arms. The Duke smothered her with violent kisses, and the twins executed a wild war dance round the group. "Good heavens, child, where have you been?" said Mr. Otis rather angrily, thinking that she had been playing some foolish trick on them. "Cecil and I have been riding all over the country looking for you, and your mother has been frightened to death. You must never play these practical jokes any more."
"Except on the ghost, except on the ghost!"
shrieked the twins as they capered about.
"My own darling, thank God you are found. You must never leave my side again,"
murmured Mrs. Otis as she kissed the trembling child and smoothed the tangled gold of her hair.
"Papa," said Virginia quietly, "I have been with the ghost. He is dead, and you must come and see him. He had been very wicked, but he was really sorry for all that he had done, and he gave me this box of beautiful jewels before he died."
The whole family gazed at her in mute astonishment. But she was quite grave and serious.
and turning round, she led them through the opening in the wainscoting down a narrow secret corridor. Washington